Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome to another News in Focus program. It is February the 18th, the year is 2015. The article that we're looking at comes to us from, hold on just a moment, comes to us from WND.com. It's entitled, again, I need to scroll up, it's entitled Major Change at Famous U.S. Megachurch. The famous megachurch that's being described is Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church. That's down in Florida. At one point, it was the fastest growing Presbyterian church in the nation. And, of course, D. James Kennedy was there for, listen to this, 47 years. What a legacy. He died in the year 2007 after 47 years of ministry at the Fort Lauderdale, Florida church. The article says he preached Jesus is the only way to God, urged Christians to discern between good and evil, pointed out the failings of the theory of evolution, affirmed the resurrection of Jesus Christ, believed that the church should be a social force in society, defending traditional marriage and opposing abortion. He named one of his efforts, quote, Reclaiming America for Christ, end quote. When it comes to faith in the public square, Coral Ridge is now moving in a new direction. Pastor and popular evangelical author, and this is a very hard name for me to pronounce, and if I butcher it, please forgive me. It's Tullian. It's T-U-L-L-I-A-N. And it's Chavidian. And there's a J in there that I'm not pronouncing well. Chavidian is in the pulpit and has made it, for the most part, a, quote, no comment zone when it comes to matters such as sanctity of life and the sin of Sodom, end quote. Regarding social and moral concerns, Chavidian is happy to talk about them in the public library or somewhere else, but the 42-year-old grandson of Billy Graham says the pulpit should be reserved for leaders to, and I quote, diagnose sinners by preaching God's law and then deliver sinners by preaching God's gospel, end quote. He says, I think it's fine for the preacher to comment on things that are going on in the world as long as the preacher recognizes that his role is first and foremost to deliver rest to the weary and heavy laden. So, what are we to make of that? Let's just pause for just a moment and ask ourselves, what is the primary role of the preacher in the pulpit? Because he says it is to deliver rest to the weary and the heavy laden. So I wonder how we would reconcile that very focus. My goal today in entering the pulpit Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesdays, whenever you enter the pulpit, is to deliver rest to the weary and heavy laden. How would we reconcile that with the mandate to make disciples? How would we reconcile those two ideas? Because I would submit to you that the Great Commission of Matthew 28 makes it abundantly clear that first and foremost, the primary responsibility of the apostles and then subsequently all those who follow the apostles' doctrine and continue the apostles' ministry is to make disciples of the Lord Jesus Christ. And I would contend that sometimes in the process of making disciples, rest will not be delivered to the weary and heavy laden. Or at least it might not be perceived as rest. And that's what makes it very difficult to analyze this article and this preacher from Florida's perspective. Chavidian, who preaches each week to some 1,600 people at the Fort Lauderdale Church, said the pulpit has a unique job description and using it predominantly to speak as an activist on social issues is not being faithful to its primary purpose, to which I would agree. That's not to say, he says, that Christians aren't supposed to have a biblical worldview and a life view and have certain convictions regarding certain things that are going on in the world and speak those convictions. But that's not something for which this gifted speaker and writer is known. The author of 8 books, including his latest, It Is Finished, 365 Days of Good News, rarely addressed abortion, arguably the greatest human rights issue in U.S. history, and he says little about the redefinition of marriage, a historically unprecedented moral revolution taking place in less than a generation. The article goes on to say that although publicly quiet about social issues, Chavidian is outspoken when it comes to fellow Christians who step into the fray. He calls the 10,000-member First Baptist Dallas a controversial church in his It Is Finished account of Tim Tebow's decision to cancel a speaking engagement there. Tebow dropped out after homosexuals mounted a pressure campaign. The church is led by Robert Jeffress, a vocal opponent of same-sex marriage. So he calls it a controversial church. That's an interesting description because obviously he's using that in with negative connotations. But you have to wonder to yourself, as the glide path that America is presently on continues to digress into debauchery, moral debauchery, one can only wonder to what degree all churches will not become controversial churches in the days to come, at least those who are faithful to preaching the biblical text. And that's really the issue of the article, because there seems to be a theological grid that the preacher from Florida is superimposing on the text in such a way that he perhaps misses opportunities to talk about strong issues when the text clearly permits him to do some such. Tertullian makes a strong point that his focus needs to be on expository preaching. And so expository preaching is kind of based on the idea that the text will drive the topic, that the systematic moving through chapters and verses will guide what the preacher delivers. And so therefore, particular social topics will not come up. For example, he's not going to plan a topical message on abortion. He won't deliver a message on same-sex marriage. But if he says, if the text allows for that, then he'll seize the opportunity to do it. In fact, let me quote. He says, I won't skip verses. I won't skip verses that are uncomfortable. That now the author of the article says, but when he preached from Romans 1 and 2 last February, he had little to say about the most explicit condemnation of homosexual conduct in the New Testament. And then the author includes in the article two hyperlinks, YouTube videos, to the sermon in which at least what's presented in the YouTube video. Now, there may be more, and perhaps the author is not being fair to the preacher. That's certainly a possibility here. But what is presented from the YouTube videos clearly shows that having been given an opportunity from the text in Romans chapter number 1 and 2 to strongly condemn homosexuality, our preacher from Florida does not do that. He asserts that Paul's larger point in his catalog of sins, ranging from ingratitude to gossip, with two verses devoted to homosexual conduct, was to reveal the self-righteousness of his readers and to show that inside the church, people are just as guilty as outside the church. Well, I simply would disagree with him. I don't think that that's Paul's focus. I absolutely do not think that Paul's focus is to show that those inside the church are just as guilty as those outside the church. And yes, he does mention gossips, but the list that he mentions here, evil, covetous, malice, full of envy, murderers, strife, deceit, maliciousness, gossip, slanders, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless, reading again from chapter number 1 of Romans. I can't imagine that Paul is saying that is existing inside the church. I mean, certainly he's not saying that. I mean, certainly that's not Paul's focus. He says in verse 28, and since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, and covetousness and malice. They are full of envy. And in the YouTube clip, and you can watch it for yourself. I don't want to capture it and then re-record it here, because it could be that the larger context is abundantly sufficient. It could be that the author selectively edited the sermon in order to make his point, and so I don't want to do that. But to be fair to the author of the article, certainly Tertullian plays down, at least in the portion of the sermon that we were able to listen to, he plays down the seriousness of the homosexual conduct that is being described. And certainly, if a preacher was committed to expository preaching and he knew the current climate in America and he got to Romans chapter number 1 and he read, "For this reason, God gave them up to dishonorable passions. Their women exchanged natural relations for those that are contrary to nature. The men likewise gave up natural relations for women and were consumed with passion one for another, men committing shameless acts with men and receiving in themselves the due penalty of their error." Certainly, if you were committed to expository preaching and you got to those two verses, you could stop and condemn homosexuality in America. But there doesn't seem to be any indication that this preacher is willing to do that. And that's quite unfortunate. That's really quite unfortunate. Tertullian said, I probably butchered even more that time, T, and that's silent, T-C-H-I-V-I-D-J-I-A-N, said, "Long before President Obama's controversial remarks at the 2015 National Prayer Breakfast, that there have been horrible sins committed in the name of Jesus. One is how slow the church in the South was 2,000 years ago to say slavery was bad." Now that's very ironic, because the same preacher who's condemning the church for not saying anything 2,000 years ago isn't saying much today, giving his opportunity to say things. When asked about the silence of the German evangelical preachers in the face of discriminatory and deadly Nazi policies toward Jews, gypsies, and other so-called undesirables, Tertullian at first said he was ignorant of that dark chapter in church history, which I can't imagine how such an educated man could be ignorant, but he goes on to say in the phone interview, "I don't know enough about their silence or what they said or did not say or the reasons why they did not say what they said back then." After evidence of German evangelicals' muted responses to the Nazis' assault on life and dignity was given in a follow-up email, he replied, "To the degree that Christians and Christian leaders remained silent during the atrocities that were committed against Jewish people under the Nazi regime, then they were wrong and negligent in their responsibilities as Christians." But does he think German pulpits should have rung out with denunciations of Hitler and his henchmen? It's not clear. My point is, and has always been, that the pulpit in particular is a very sacred job description. It is reserved to diagnose sinners by preaching God's law, and then to deliver sinners by preaching God's gospel from every text every week. Okay, again, these very specific sentences, and we've all said them, and we're all guilty of trying to concisely summarize what the pulpit's job is or what should happen from the pulpit. It's very difficult here because I don't know that every text permits you to preach the gospel. And perhaps you're going to take me to task for that, and that would be fine if you would. But again, my experience has been that in order to always preach the gospel from every text, sometimes I almost have to ignore the context and just go on a rabbit trail. And I don't know if that's really being faithful to the text. I don't know. I've looked at different texts and trying to find the gospel in every text. Let me just take one for example, and maybe you're out there and you can provide great enlightenment to me and show me where it is. But I preached a sermon to a group of students at a Christian school here in town, and it was David's sin against Bathsheba, and yes, the gospel was there, but not explicitly, and maybe that's fine, maybe that's what he means, but But again, trying to find the gospel in every single text to me becomes challenging. Although I know that's the goal. But I would submit to you that sometimes it's not always there. And I don't think it's intentionally created to be in every single spot. And yes, I know Luke 24. And yes, I know that the law and the prophets and the Psalms speak of Christ. But sometimes I just believe that the text is clearly a rebuke of sin, and that's it. Again, maybe I'm wrong, and I'm happy to hear from you. The article goes on to talk about John Knox, who was in fact a Reformed preacher, and Tertullian, and he does address social issues. Again, I think the author's point is that this preacher down in Florida is missing some opportunities to address social issues, and maybe that's okay. Maybe it's fine. I don't know. What is your opinion? I'd love to hear from you. Could you give me an awesome comment, or maybe send me an email, P-A-S-T-O-R, that is the word pastor, followed by A-T as in Alpha Tango BBC, that's Bravo Bravo Charlie, at gmail.com. And I would enjoy hearing from you. Those are my thoughts. What are yours? Maybe you're in the congregation down there. Maybe you could give some enlightenment. Does this preacher address social issues? Is this a mischaracterization of his pulpit presence? Thanks for listening. Have a great day.